Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. More to be desired are they than gold,
yea,
than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb.
Hey, Cecilia, that's a neat song. I haven't heard that in years. Go ahead and sing verse 2, too.
The statutes of the Lord are right, bringing joy to the heart. The commandments of the Lord are sure, bringing light to the eyes.
And much fine gold, better than much fine gold, and sweeter than the honeycomb, David sang, and as you sang. That's how we saw the law of God, both in general as well as the specific Ten Commandments.
Yeah, but sometimes the law isn't sweet, and it's not like a golden treasure. It's
a bitter pill?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can understand that. And we're going to be talking about the Ten Commandments today, and we'll talk about how they can be bitter, but yet how they can bring joy, and they are perfect, and they can help us. Probably going to be looking at the Ten Commandments for the next couple lessons, because we're going to look at each one of the Ten Commandments after we do it in general, each one specifically. Before we start reading chapter 20 and the Ten Commandments, I'd like to note that God gives the ten, but also he elaborates on several of them. And we're first, as we read through it here, we're not going to do the elaboration, but just reading the basic Ten Commandments. Sound okay to you, Cecilia?
Yeah.
And then we'll pick up with the elaboration when we look at each one of the commandments specifically. So go ahead, if you'll start there in verse 1.
And God spoke all these words.
You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on earth, beneath or in the waters below. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Honor your father and your mother. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his manservant, or his maidservant, his ox, or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor.
Why did he give these Ten Commandments? I mean, didn't they know this stuff already?
Well, yes and no. And that's the first thing to point out in general. These people had been among people with other religions in Egypt for so long. They had forgotten a lot of what they had been taught, or they never had been taught. So no, they probably didn't. And don't forget, they're just like you and me in the sense that they're human beings, they were sinful, just like you and me, and that they too will quickly move away from worship of the real God to things that are more earth-based, more flesh-based, more sinful-based, pleasing our own selfish desires. So God gave these Ten Commandments, and actually, by the way, these really were given not as commandments to begin with. They're statements, and they were basically one word. One word.
One word?
Yeah, Hebrew can do this. Within one word, it can make a statement about you are not idol worshippers. You are not murderers. You are not stealers. For them, it's one word with a prefix and suffix, which makes the statements of who is doing what.
So, in other words, it's not you shall not do this and you shall not do that. It's because you are my people, you are not.
Right, right. And that's why he gave these, to start that beginning process of tell them who they are. Now, the reason we call them commandments is because even though there were the ten statements, we quickly realize we don't do it, do we?
No.
And so they point out the fact that we don't, and therefore they end up to be a command that we are to, and it points out that we don't. And we'll get into more about that later with the Ten Commandments and the usage of them. But for right now, let's just stick with this. It's just statements. Now that they're the new people of God, who they're going to be, they're statements, and God's making it clear who they are, differentiating from all the other religions in the world.
Moses went up the mountain, and God said to him,
I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me.
This first part is so significant. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery.
You're right, Cecilia. It really is. It's setting the ground. He's saying his name, I'm the Lord your God, saying what he just did, called you out of slavery, out of Egypt. And he's and they all can think about how that happened, all the miracles that only God could do. And that's the God who did all that. And then he says,
you shall have no other gods before me.
So all those other Egyptian gods, the ones that God humiliated with the ten plagues, because pretty much most of those ten plagues had a god behind them all, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
The frogs, the flies, and the whatever.
The darkness, especially, their sun god.
Oh, yeah. God embarrassed them all, and he's saying, I'm the only God. I want you to worship only me. Have only me.
Wow. But with all the miracles he did, if I were one of his people, I'd think, of course this is my God. He's rescued me. He's taking care of me. He's feeding me.
It's one thing to say it and another thing to do it. God is actually going to be teaching him here what worshiping a God and having only one God is about. And that's why we've got Ten Commandments, not just one. Because they're going to find that even though you can say it, even though you may know it, it's not quite that easy. We're going to be referring to the catechism. Since we're Lutherans, we'll use the Lutheran one, although the other catechisms do similar things. And the catechism I grew up with talked about this first commandment. What does it mean? Do you remember the...
We should fear, love, and trust God above all things.
Above all things. Luther said it in a different way, kind of reverse. So, when you're having one of those bad, horrible, no good, rotten, miserable, ugly days, what do you turn to bring sanity back in your life?
Chocolate.
Okay, so chocolate's your God.
No.
Some people turn to the alcohol. I got to have a drink. I got to calm down. Or some people will, hey, I can manage things in life. I can do this. And though it's a tough thing, I'll figure it out. Who at that point is God?
It's themselves.
Yeah. Their own strength, their own wit, their own wisdom. There are so many subtleties to this, and that's why God is pounding again. Though he did all the miracles, they still didn't get it. Though God's done all these miracles, do we get it?
Ooh.
I know I don't. And I got to be constantly reminded, I'm not God. Other things aren't God. There's only one God, and he's the one I have to fear, meaning have great respect, awe, wonder. Him who I have to love, and he is who I have to trust above all things.
You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on earth, beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sins of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments.
You may remember earlier I mentioned that we were just going to give the Ten Commandments and not some of the extra words and explanations that God was going to give. Here we have the first example of that. God gave the second commandment, no graven images. And then he goes on to say, I'm going to be a jealous God. I am going to visit the third and fourth generation, but I'll love those who fear me.
Hey, wait a minute. That's the second commandment?
Yeah, no graven images.
I don't remember memorizing the Ten Commandments like that.
Yeah, some have had it, some haven't. This is actually how it is in the Exodus, and we'll see him again in Deuteronomy. Somewhere in the medieval church, the Catholic Church, and I'm not throwing stones here. This is true history. One of the priests and one of the teachers said, you know, we aren't seeing any images being made anymore. We'll just touch base on that when we talk about the first commandment. But hey, we do have a lot of problem with people coveting. And coveting has so many things. We really should break that up so we can talk more about coveting because that's such a big problem. So let's renumber these and go there. So that's what Luther ended up with. This was handed to him for several hundred years. And quite frankly, Luther said, hey, I'm not going to change this too. They're going to throw me out.
They did that anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did anyway. Yeah. Well, that's why a lot of the churches have the commandments listed this way, though, is because somewhere in the Middle Ages it was done that way. But technically, yeah, no graven images is number two.
You mean like the graven images that the people may have been taught to worship in Egypt?
Well, yes and no. God had already stated he's the God in the first commandment.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's saying, I don't want you to make an image of me, because too quickly you can move from worshiping the true God to worshiping only the image.
And what you imagine God to be like.
Correct. Correct. And an image is something we make. And God doesn't want us to worship something made by our hands. Heck, I kind of wish we'd had this commandment in, because there's a lot of people who worship their cars, worship their houses. I'm sometimes a little guilty of that and all my repairs and trying to make it real good, and I'm proud of my house and all that I do. We worship things. And so, you know, really, this commandment does bring back in a big whammo for us in the 21st century.
Mm.
It's not about things we make. It's about God, who is spirit. Therefore, no images.
I think I like this picture that the second part of what was read presents.
Oh?
I am a jealous God punishing the children for the sins of the fathers to the third and fourth generation.
Hmm.
I mean, it would be like you robbed a bank and poor Tori and Meg are punished for it. Of course you get punished, but they get punished and their kids get punished and their kids get punished, etc. I mean, and they don't even know great-great-grandfather Pastor Dave who robbed the bank.
Well, no,
I don't like this.
I get that, but that's not quite what it means. Have you ever heard the story of how at Christmas dinner, one day, Mom was showing her older daughter how to prepare the roast for Christmas dinner, and she said, "Now, you have to cut off the ends here before you put it in the roast." And the girl said, "But why?" "Well, that's what we've always done." "But Mom..." And great-grandma happened to be in the room because she came from the nursing home. I'm stretching the story just a little bit to another generation.
Mm-hmm.
And the great-grandma said, Mom turns to great-grandma and says, "Well, that's how you taught your daughter and she taught me, right?" And great-grandma says, "Well, that's because my roaster pan was so much smaller, I had to cut it off to fit it in. But you got a big roaster. You don't have to cut it off."
Okay.
We teach our kids, whether we know it or not, and that carries down because we do what our parents do. And that's really what this is saying. I don't want you to have any idols and idol worship, because if you do, then your children are going to do it, and your grandchildren are going to do it, and your great-grandchildren are going to do it, and then I'm going to have to punish them too, God is saying. That's why I am a jealous God. I want you to only worship me, not idols. Hey, now, if you don't do the idols, but you are a worshiper of God in spirit, well, then I'll be showing love to all those generations just the same way.
I have a story to tell, Pastor Dave. I was in eighth grade, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And what, if anyone remembers, is my most favorite set of books of all time?
That'd be Lord of the Rings, I think.
That would be right. So I was reading it for the first time. I got it from our circulating library system here in the United States. And I read it. And I read it again. And then I read parts of it again and again and again. And I just loved it. And finally, my mother told me to bring them down and send them back to the library.
So this is all in your eighth grade and
eighth,
you read
ninth
it
grade
multiple times.
Yes,
and weren't giving it up.
Yes, I was not about. I didn't want to. I knew someday I'd have to, but oh, it killed me. And then we were going to a Baptist church at the time, and the preacher was preaching on idolatry. And suddenly it hit me that I had an idol.
Ah.
Those three books. And Tolkien was a Christian.
But that didn't matter. You made it your idol.
Yeah, I made it my idol. But I came to understand later that he wouldn't have wanted that.
Well, what is an idol? That's the base word in idolatry.
An idol is something that you consider so important that you would rather have that than anything.
Exactly. It also can be something you turn to, trust in, depend on, cling to. We talked about that a little bit with the first commandment. And that, again, deals with the second commandment, graven images. sometimes I think in our world we have a lot of graven images, and your example of Lord of the Rings is a perfect one. For some people, it's their car. For some, it's their house that they live in or own or have fixed up. I know my wife and I struggle with that some. For some people, it's their kids. They'll do anything for their children, and they just idolize them. Oh, there's that word again, idol. Idolize them.
For some people, it's money.
And here's another interesting thing that we need to be careful with, and I don't want to go too far with this, but do think about it. I remember seeing, before I lost my sight, a picture of Jesus on the wall we had, and I think it was just his face and shoulders. And it was a man with long hair, a beard, and a mustache. And I kept thinking of that picture even after I lost my sight. And I was picturing Jesus. That's Jesus, that's Jesus. And sometimes we make idols out of even good Christian things.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can do it out of the crosses they wear around their neck. If we look and depend on it rather than God who is behind it. And that's really the key with the second commandment that God is trying to get to. It was a common practice believed in the Egyptian world that gods were spirits, but if you made an image, they would come down and settle in and dwell within that image. And God wanted to make sure that people didn't bring that type of worship with them out of Egypt. He wanted people, and still does, to worship him in spirit and in truth.
Let's see. I started out by singing parts of Psalm 19, and it talked about how sweet the law is and wonderful, but I haven't found the joy yet.
Yeah, that's the thing about God's law, it is so glaring. In juxtaposition to us, it shows how far away we are from him, and it makes us uncomfortable and can feel guilty because we don't serve him well and adequately. And yeah, but here's the joy part of it all. What did he say in that definition? I, the Lord your God, am a
jealous God.
He's so jealous for us, even though we don't be jealous for him, and that's in the positive way. I mean, I love my wife, and if anyone flirts with her, I'll get jealous because she's my wife, and I love her, and I'll die for her.
Sure.
Well, God will do the same thing. In fact, I think he did die for us. He loves us so much that even though we don't do very well at keeping the commandments, he does very well at loving you and me. And because of that, that's why we're studying these, so that we can then, by learning of these, live our lives to say thank you for what he has done for us.
But, Pastor Dave, you and I do get rewarded sometimes.
We do?
Yeah, when our listeners write to us.
Ah, yes, and we please do want you to reward us and write us. You can do so at
info at
not-alone.net. And remember,
we are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. Our sincere thanks go to Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn for their interlude music.